Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. Great announce. Al was a little upset with me earlier for ignoring his achievement. I was noting that the president has lost this month like 27 or 28 lawsuits, and I thought, wow, that's pretty impressive. That's like a record. And Al said, no, he has lost 36 lawsuits this month. Can you believe it? 36.
I can't believe what I just heard.
Now, to be fair, I was the attorney in at least half of them. But still, it's a lot of lawsuits.
Be that as it may.
It's impressive on some level, I think. But anyway, well, Iron Mike Irons, you're here. I'm Dave Brown, I'm here. And I think things are going well. Let me ask you this. Compared to last week when we were speaking, has your opinion of the 2020 Patriots changed in any way?
Chris Collinsworth made the point time and again during the broadcast, and I think it's something that you and I spoke about last week and even before that, Scartelli mm-hmm. and I did. They're a running team. They are a power running team. They need to play clean football to win. They played clean football. They beat up a team that was allegedly physical on Sunday. They were better in every phase of the game. And it was – I had a smile on my face the day after the game. That was an ass-kicking. And if Newton doesn't throw his patented koozie-esque bounce pass in the back of the end zone to Myers, they win that game going away, and there's no drama late in the fourth quarter.
Right, you said after the game at some point that I had I think you said something along the lines of we laid out the game plan to win this, but we weren't even talking about this game. We were talking about, or maybe somebody tweeted that at us. We were just talking about sort of how does this Patriots team win? They win by controlling the ball, making stops, and waiting for the other team to make mistakes. If they can avoid making mistakes and let the other team make mistakes, then they're in good shape. And a lot of people were pointing to the two bad snaps that really set the Ravens back. And those are two huge plays in the game. They absolutely, Baltimore can execute those two snaps. They're in a much better position. But not making the mistakes has been the essence of Patriots football for two decades. But whatever the game plan is, making fewer mistakes than your opponent has really been the key to a lot of these close games. That's how you win 70 to 75% of the time.
Absolutely. And you made the point last week. I'm sorry to step on you. You made the point last week that, if you turn a couple of plays here or there, the Patriots could have been coming into last week's game at 5-3. And, I remain steadfast in my point that it's a couple of plays most often that decide football games. And if you make them, great. And if you don't, you're probably going to lose. The Ravens had the only turnover when Jackson got impatient and tried to go down the right sideline with plenty of time left before halftime, by the way. And then the aforementioned two bad snaps in the second half.
And first of all, if you want to talk about, it fills in this narrative of sort of like the Patriots didn't win it, Baltimore lost it, ergo the Patriots aren't better than Baltimore. Okay. So when we play that game, do you then play the game that, fair enough, but if the Patriots hadn't fumbled, if Cam Newton hadn't fumbled against Buffalo, Patriots would have won that game. Ergo, the Patriots are better than Buffalo. Like, do you see where I'm going with this? That, like, you can't just take away one achievement on a certain rationale, but then not apply that same rationale to the rest of the season and go look back and decide, how good these teams are. Of course, it always comes back to we have to figure out how good everyone is at that exact moment. I think you had a really – who was that guy on Twitter that you were responding to? He was talking about how he learned nothing about the Patriots, or he learned more about the Ravens.
Oh, it was a producer who worked for the Dan Patrick show. He said the game told us more about Baltimore than it did about the Patriots.
What does that mean?
My point was, is if you're poking holes in that win, is someone who's a Patriots partisan, as you know I am, said you don't know what the hell you're looking at. That was a, I think the line was that was a PhD class in winning football. And the first then to backpedal for a second to your point that you just made, on day one at any level of football, I haven't played higher than, you know, much higher than Pee Wee, but day one, first practice, you can't lose the game. And Bill Belichick has said that. You don't lose the game first and foremost. And now they haven't lost the game. And Devin McCourty said it after the game on Sunday. They're learning how to win. And we made that point last week.
Yep.
Well, they're a much different football team than the one that couldn't move the football and looked inept against Denver.
I'm sitting here as a Giants fan, and I got to say, we're in a very similar place right now. Where I watch the Giants, they've been playing all these close games all year, doing things really well, and then kind of falling apart in fourth quarter because they lack depth, they lack experience. But all of those close games have started paying some dividends. You're seeing some toughness emerge. You're seeing they put the game away against Philly this week, and suddenly they're right back in the hunt for the division with only three wins. And then there's the Patriots. They get to, what are they now, 4-5?
Yes.
4-5. So they're alive in the playoff hunt. They could even lose once or twice more and still make the playoffs. But it's the same thing. All these close games that they've been in, you can go one or two ways on that.
Right.
You know, you can start building on it and getting over the hump. And that's what the Patriots did this weekend. That's what I saw the Giants do this weekend.
Are you ready for the 6-10 division champion Giants to be hosting Tom Brady and the Buccaneers at 11-5 the first weekend in January? Yes.
I'm so ready for that. They should have beaten Tampa the first time they played.
Yes, they should have. But again, they're still learning how to win football games.
Yeah. And here's the thing. People want to just crown the champion now. A year ago, they would have just crowned the Ravens the Super Bowl champion. Things are constantly changing in the NFL. And when you sit here and try to act like you've learned something, you really haven't. There's nothing to learn yet. You're learning like the framework of the season, like the parameters. Like last year we knew that if somebody didn't figure out how to play defense better against Lamar Jackson, then the Ravens were probably going to win the Super Bowl. But what we didn't know was that the teams would figure that out. Teams figured that out. They have now. This is like a pendulum in the NFL where maybe you reach your peak greatness and nobody else can defend you. But then you regress to the mean. You start to come back to mediocrity. You know, I think the fastest life cycle of this was probably the Wildcat with Miami in 2008. And the first week they showed up running it and the Patriots looked like a complete mess. And then over time, teams caught up. Teams figured out how to defend it. That's what happens. You have, you know, all of your opponents for the remainder of the season are fixated on – a lot of smart people are fixated on how to stop you. And that's what's happened with the Ravens. You know, we saw it with the Rams in Super Bowl 53. The Patriots were really – the first team to just shut down that offense for some time. They played that quarters defense. And then the Rams came back and they saw it from everybody. So then there's a little back and forth. The Rams have to figure out, okay, how are we going to score some more? Now the teams have learned how to defend us. And there's a little give and take with all of this. And the point I'm trying to make here is you do not know what teams are going to be in January all up to February. Think about, you know, the Ravens in 2012. They got their act together on offense, and all of a sudden, they're the best team in the NFL. The Giants in 2011, they got healthy. All of a sudden, they were the best team in the NFL. You could look at Giants games all year that year and say, this team is garbage. But they figured it out. Teams can figure it out. The Patriots still have a chance to figure it out. So this idea that we learn more about one team than the other, it's really silly. And then that guy said he guaranteed that both the Ravens and Patriots would lose in the first round. So I don't know why. I don't know why you need to make that guarantee right now. But we'll keep an eye on that. He could be right, but, you know, maybe not.
It's the James Stewart corollary where you throw enough shit out there, eventually one time you're going to get something right.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I don't understand this sort of pervasive need to feel like we know everything that's going on in real time. Like you can look back after the Super Bowl and figure out what happened. We can just enjoy it while it happens. We don't have to sit here and declare that we all understand football inside and out. And, you know, I think, you know, the one thing that had the big attention last week was the rookies, right?
They were all declared busts.
Yeah, Tom Curran's question, like, why aren't the rookies, you know, giving you more? I think the biggest answer to that is it comes down to injuries plus – because every top pick that they've had, even including Kyle Duggar, who missed some time at the beginning of the season, every top pick that they've had going back to 2016 has missed significant time. It's Isaiah Wynn missed the whole season. You know, Sony Michel has missed time. And he wasn't even a top pick. Cyrus Jones missed a season. N'Keal Harry missed the first half of last year. He's had the concussion this year. Those things stilt and stunt development. And then you have COVID, which gave them 3 weeks of training camp. It's going to take time for rookies to develop and get into the system. We talked about Damian Harris last year. Where's Damian Harris? Why is he Damian Harris? Why isn't he out there? It's because he wasn't ready. He wasn't showing them in practice that he was up to his full potential. Now he is, and now that pick is paying dividends. Chase,
it's the Patriots running back redshirt year. It's a time-honored tradition.
Yeah. Unless you're Sony Michel, which is why he got drafted in the first round. He was ready to play. Chase Winovich, 9 pressures, according to Jeff Howe, who tracks those things. He drew a holding penalty. Complete force. Like, he just kind of changed up and went with some inside rushes that the
not according to almost the coach Greg Bedard there, my friend. Not so fast, my friend. Greg Bedard wrote an article ripping him because he spotted a camera in the stands in an empty stadium. That's the kind of analysis you're forking over your dollars.
What does that mean? He spotted
a camera. It doesn't mean anything. It's word salad. It's almost a sentence.
What does that mean? He spotted a camera.
There was a picture that he took on his flailing website, featured Winovich looking right into a camera after he made a play, as if he was doing something wrong. I've seen enough bad headshots of Greg Bedard to know that he looks into a camera preening once upon a time. Let's not waste our breaths on that.
It just sounds like nonsense to me. I don't even understand it. Okay. But the rookies, I mean, Uche, he made plays. Duggar, like, all of a sudden you're like, why did they draft this? What was Duggar, Division II? Why did they draft this Division II guy from a place I've never heard of? Lenore Ryan?
Yes.
And now you see it because he's this superb athlete who can kind of play this, like, hybrid safety. And now he's out there setting the edge. Like,
he had 12 tackles on Sunday. 12 tackles.
12 tackles. He's out there setting the edge, doing a good job. And that's the key, is because now they needed somebody who's got a little bit of thump to him but is faster than a linebacker. And there you go. Now you've got a recipe for how you handle this Ravens rushing defense. Dare I say a blueprint?
Yeah. God bless Adrian Phillips. Adrian Phillips as well. He's not a rookie. Just a typical under the radar Belichick signing, who's been out there all year. Belichick made the point, this was regarding Ryan Izzo rather than Adrian Phillips, but I think it applies to Adrian Phillips, is that availability is the best ability. He's been out there all year. He's given them everything they could have asked for.
So here's a – let me put this out to you. Heading into this week against the Ravens, the Patriots had gone through, I think, the only time in the dynasty, a 16-game span in which they went 7-9. Had you heard that stat?
Correct, yes.
So what if that 16 games was the rebuilding year? Like, what if now, like, move, like, what if their next 16 games they win 10 or 12 games, right?
I think you see what I'm saying? You know what? That's actually a really fair point. I felt like you know, I kept referencing the 93 season last on the last episode. Yeah, I think there was a lot of factors in play that maybe I had my head in the ground about last year. There was something going on behind the scenes, and they weren't as good as their 8-0 start showed last year. They were still a very good football team. They were 12-4. They took the eventual conference finalist Chiefs deep into that game at Foxborough. But you know, Bill made the point again is that they're figuring out who they are. COVID scrapped the preseason games. Belichick made that point again this week. Why are the rookies not doing anything? Well, it may be one game, and it's just one game, but you had Harris play well, Uche play well, Duggar play well last week. The young guys are emerging. Yeah. Some guys are stepping forward in their second year. You know, and the other thing is about the Winovich stuff, just really quickly, Dave, is that, as is the case every year, they are a game plan specific team. There's going to be some days where Winovich doesn't fit if they're playing, you know, I hate to use the phrase Team X the way that you don't want to use the word blueprint, but there's going to be games where Winovich doesn't fit. And they do have depth at the hybrid position with Phillips and with Duggar. Even Devin McCourty a little bit, who's a, you know, an underappreciated player, Jo'Wan Williams, et cetera.
Right. Well, you know, and it's not just rookies. It's young players. It's recent draftees. And people went and destroyed them in this draft. Went and destroyed them last week for these guys not producing. J.C. Jackson, he certainly produced. What's interceptions, what, 5 games in a row?
And that's the strength of their team, the defensive backfield on defense. And they're piecing it they're doing it without Gilmore. In the front seven.
They're doing it without the best player.
The front six. Right.
So yeah, J.C. Jackson played well. Justin Jackson played well. It was a 6th-round pick. Onwenu, he gave up 1 sack. Ben Volen was ready to ship him back to
Ben
Michigan.
Volen called for his benching after Matt Judon got around for a sack. Do you want to know what he did the rest of the game, according to Jeff Howe? No sacks, no pressures, the proverbial clean sheet.
That's right.
Get your shine box mittens. What? Dave, he is the lead pro football writer for the Boston Globe.
We've been over this. I know.
That's Groundhog Day. I get it. On the other side of the ball, we're not talking about rookies, but the young guys, Harrison Myers, Onwenu. I mean, so we just brought up Onwenu. Harrison Myers, man.
I mean, I also like Onwenu is a 6th-round draft pick who is clearly capable of being a starting tackle in the NFL. That is insane.
And he's played 3 positions on the line already.
He replaced a 5th-round draft pick who was a starting tackle in the NFL.
They can't draft, Dave.
He's playing next to a 4th-round draft pick who's playing next to an undrafted center.
Mm-hmm.
Who's playing next to a 3rd-round pick who's playing next to a 1st-round pick. And then and I'm also told that Bill can't draft in the early rounds, but the left tackle is 23rd overall. So I don't know. It's really strange. It's first of all, and then people will bring up like N'Keal Harry. And, you know, N'Keal Harry does a lot of things well. He has not emerged as a productive pass receiver yet. I don't know if he will. That could take time for people. You look at Myers. I mean, Myers has been with the team for about 8 weeks longer than Harry. And he's just starting to become like a productive, reliable receiver. Not just a guy who surprises you with some good catches, but a guy who the last couple of weeks has been a big playmaker for them. Is that going to come from N'Keal Harry? I have absolutely no idea. Can I rule it out? No.
People are going to judge their receivers by fantasy football statistics. This is not the kind of team that's going to put up, have a guy monster throttle it and put up 31 fantasy points. What Jacoby Myers does is he moves the chains. He made the spectacular play in the back right end zone throw to Burkhead, but he's been solid. He's been reliable in the same way the Bird has been solid and been reliable, in the same way that Burkhead has been solid and reliable, in the same way that Julian Edelman has made a career out of being reliable.
Yep. Well, I mean, now you're looking at Myers and a heck of a throw. I saw some people knock that throw. And let me tell you something. I've seen good high school quarterbacks, which really is like Myers is like, basically, you know, Myers, Edelman, those guys who played quarterback in college, but that's not really their strength is throwing. They're like just like they're, you know, I look at them like top level high school quarterbacks, and I've seen good high school quarterbacks go in there. Not guys who want to play D1 quarterback in college, but I've seen guys go in there and you throw that ball and it's just like, it crushes people who can't throw. And the weather was terrible. Okay. That throw he made, his first pass in the NFL, you know, dare I say it was a dime. Okay. That's tough to do. And I know people have given that, have been like, that throw wasn't so great. Look, for a guy who's not Cam Newton, let alone Tom Brady, that was a pretty sweet throw.
And a great adjustment by Burkhead to make the catch.
Yes. And you know what? I'm not saying to make the guy that we start giving him 10 throws a game or something like that. But it's one of those things where you're looking at it and you're going, oh, you know, Troy Brown, Julian Edelman, Jacoby Myers, the next guy who can kind of be that, what do you need me to do right now?
Edelman as well.
That's huge.
And what do those guys all have in common? What do those guys all have in common? Very, very smart football players. High football IQ.
Well,
cliches for 100, yeah. Alex.
All late round draft. You know, Edelman and Myers both play quarterback. They both understand what the quarterback's thinking. You know, Troy Brown could probably do anything on a football field. So, you know, so I see a lot of similarities there. And Bill loves those guys, especially when you can draft him in the seventh round, or Troy Brown in the eighth round, a round that no longer exists, or Jacoby Myers didn't have to use a draft pick on. So, you know, I think what we're seeing right now is a lot of time and a lot of work is starting to pay off. And so you look at that and you go, if this team can get through the rest of the season, continuing to improve the way they have been, maybe they can lose one, or, you know, they can get through this with only one or two more losses, get to 9 or 10 wins, sneak in the playoffs. And, you know, only one team's getting a bye. So there's a lot of opportunities there's opportunities for the lower seeds to cause some trouble here.
As of right now, they also hold the tiebreaker over Baltimore and Miami.
Right. So, you know, we'll see how things play out. But what suddenly is interesting to me is that now we have this was always going to be an interesting season with all the change that was going on. But now we have an interesting season that has a chance to also be a competitive season. And that is, that's fun, isn't it?
It's very unexpected. If you go back to after the Denver game, you know, as I mentioned, I was doing the Ron Burgundy fart noises with my mouth leaving the bar that I was watching that game at. They've got I hate to use the phrase eminently winnable game. They have to come out and put their foot on the neck of the Texans this week. That's not a very good football team. It's a kind of that they're not going to walk in there and be 10-point favorites the same way they were in the Brady era, but that's a game that they should go down to Houston and win on Sunday.
Well, and we'll see. You know, we'll see. Houston's offense has been struggling, but, you know, the thing about the NFL is, you know, that phrase "any given Sunday," that's just not just an Al Pacino movie. It's true. It's that the other team can find a good game plan to beat you. They lost their coach.
They have a good quarterback.
And they have a good quarterback. They lost their coach in the middle of the season. But maybe some of the new things start to pay off. Maybe they develop things. Maybe they stumble on a good game plan. Maybe, you know, in 2015, Brian Stork all of a sudden was tipping the snap count one day. You know, like these things can happen. But, you know, I want to pause for a second and think about how we talk about the drafts. And, like, this idea that we're not considering what the Patriots are looking for when they draft players. We're deciding success based on an idea of success that's different from theirs, because theirs is about how do I win games. And, you know, I saw one chart this week that compared the Patriots draft capital and basically set a ratio against wins above replacement, this wins above replacement stat that Pro Football Focus has put together. Well, I think it's a really strange way to look at it, because you can't calculate wins above replacement in football the same way that you do in baseball, because 100 receiving yards for any given player might not be ideal. That might not be how the team's trying to win. Maybe you don't want to throw it to Calvin Johnson 20 times in the game and give him 200 yards because you were hoping that maybe you did that because you were down by 30 points, right? Maybe you wanted to control the clock and key in on just a few matchups with Calvin Johnson where you could really exploit something that was going on. This idea that success is translated directly to stats is very misleading. And so the way that we judge success on players completely ignores what the institutional mandate is for every position. And I think that the Patriots look at the draft, and I think they look at all player acquisition from sort of a defensive, risk-averse standpoint. If they set out, and somewhere last year this came out, Bill's position-by-position list of qualifications of what he wants each, and this is like 30 years old, but goes back to when he was with the Browns.
Right.
And I'm sure it's changed since then, but if you're playing tight end, for example, and the Patriots are looking to draft you in the first round, they're not going to do that if you don't check all of the boxes at the very minimum that they have for a tight end. Now, maybe they'll look at you and say, now in the sixth round, they might say, well, your athleticism warrants us, you know, you can't do three of the four things, but maybe we can teach you. That's a low cost. Sixth round draft pick, we'll bring you in, we'll see what we can do. Guy like Jacoby Myers, not super fast, but let's get him in here because we like a lot of the skills that he has, right? He doesn't necessarily check all of our boxes for a receiver, but he checks enough that we got to get this guy in here and see what he can do. And the media looks at it and says, did Sony Michel have 100 yards today? That's the end of the conversation. Does he have as many yards as Nick Chubb? Nope. Chubb should have been drafted sooner. And that's – no one considers that if a different team had drafted DK Metcalf, right? If he had gone to, like, Jacksonville and was playing with Gardner Minshew, would he be as good as he is in Seattle with Russell Wilson in that offense? And that's tough to say.
No, absolutely. It's the example that I saw the past week is, what if Jerry Rice, the Patriots held the pick and drafted Jerry Rice,
yep,
with having Mark Wilson and a broken down Steve Grogan throwing to him in the late 80s. I mean, it's football, really. We've railed for, Christ, Dave, we've been doing this almost a year and a half now. We rail about situational football and the lack of appreciation for that sort of thing. Football's not, to me, how do I put this? I listen to, are you familiar with who Warren Sharp is?
No.
Okay. Warren Sharp now works for the Ringer, but he's a football analyst. He's a gambler at his heart, and he breaks down things on a very, very deep level. And I actually like his analysis for the most part, but I don't think you can, I'm explaining this poorly. It's the fantasy football mindset, the fantasy sports mindset. I remember in Super Bowl 53, when Sony Michel broke the late in the game when the Patriots needed a couple of first downs to ice the game. Julian Edelman did a crackback block when he came in motion on a run that Sony Michel ran for 36 yards. A, getting from out from the shadow of their own goalpost. B, got tackled in bounds. C, made sure he protected the football.
Yep, and a first down.
Okay, you're gonna get the Pro Football Focus is gonna give the grades, you know, to Michelle for making that wrong run. Bill Belichick went on, I think it may have been on the third Do Your Job, saying that run, that play, that Edelman and the crackback block is not going to show up in a box score. It's not going to get you monster throttle fantasy points, and you're not going to get on SportsCenter, but it was a key, it was a winning play in a championship game.
Right. Like, think about places you've worked and how you know that there are things that are key to success that aren't on the balance sheet, right? It's not about like how much money the company made that quarter, or you don't see the direct connection between this person, you know, made a contribution that didn't directly lead to the business, but it enabled somebody else to go get that business. And so maybe you don't necessarily see it on the balance sheet, or if you're, you know, I'm trying to add this to another field, but let's just keep it simple, right? Let's say you're in a business where you're trying to bring in as much revenue as possible. Sometimes people make contributions that don't directly lead to that revenue. Boy, they free up somebody else to get the job done. And that's how they're thinking about it. They want those people around the office who are willing to raise their hand and say, I can take this on. I can some unexpected hurdle has come our way. I can clear it and let this company do the work that it does. And that's what they're looking for in the draft. They're not looking for, you know, they don't look at a receiver and go, okay, your guy's gonna get average 80 yards a week to receive it. Like that's not the thinking. The thinking is, I want a guy that when I snap the ball, I know he can block if we have to run. I know he can if we throw him a slant and it hits it, he can take it 30 or 40 yards. He can run sharp routes. He can do all the things that we need a receiver to do. And on any given play, when the situation arises, he can be valuable to us in a number of ways. That's what they're thinking about. And you go by position by position, and those qualifications change. But it all comes back to, how many things can this person do to help us win? Because we don't know precisely what it's going to take to win in January or February, and it could be different every single game.
I'll give you two examples of guys that fit that criteria. The two, they're not draft picks per se, but remember the furor every week over how Dwayne Allen sucked? Oh, every goddamn week, how Dwayne Allen sucked. And he was on the field all the time. He was on the field when they scored the winning touchdown in Kansas City. Why?
Yep.
They could count on him. He was reliable. He did his proverbial job.
He's a good run blocker. And I'll argue, by the way, I'll argue that look at the Patriots in 2018 lost Josh Gordon. And Dwayne Allen returned from an injury around the same time. And look at how they played after Dwayne Allen came back compared to the time when Allen was gone and they had Gordon. Okay.
The third do your job. Bill had that famous sit-down meeting with McDaniels. He says, if you want to throw the football 45 times a week all over the yard, we may win some games, but we're not going to go where we want to be. Let's figure out how we win football games. And I think that goes to the larger point I'm trying to make about Dwayne Allen. They found who they were in 2018 when he came back, very similar to the way they're finding who they are right now.
Yep.
The other one's Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan was always where Brady expected him to be, and he didn't put up 100 yards a game.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, he's if you listen to 98.5, all you would hear is that he stunk and he sucked. And why did they get guys in here who can play?
Right. And there's a lot of comfort that comes from a name receiver. Like a high end, like a Julio Jones. Like if you go get Julio Jones, people all of a sudden relax and they're like, "Oh, we're going to win the Super Bowl. Like it's over." Well, you know, they had Randy Moss here. They didn't win a Super Bowl with Randy Moss, and they could have. It came very close, and certainly they played as well as anybody ever has in 2007 when they had Randy Moss. Don't get me wrong, but there are no.
They couldn't draft receivers, but they won with Deion Branch and David Givens in 2003 and 2004.
Right. I mean, I don't even want to get into that nonsense. Again, I'll just say this. If you think they can't draft receivers, take a look at the highest they've ever drafted receivers, number 32. Start at number 32 and look at every other position. Exclude everyone they've drafted within the first 31 picks on the offensive line, on the defensive line, everywhere else. And the results are about the same, because that's the expected results after the first round.
And the one time Ron Borges wanted them to take a receiver in the first down, in the first round, they didn't, and they drafted what's likely to be a Hall of Fame defensive lineman in Richard Seymour.
That guy?
That's no good. If they should have taken David Terrell.
I told you I'm doing this podcast where I'm going to go talk about I should mention this, because I think our listener would enjoy it. Patriots Dynasty. They're doing this podcast. Which I'm gonna go on there and talk about. So they're doing this podcast where they watch old Dynasty games and they go week by week. And they asked me to come on and do one of the Giants games from 2003 when the Patriots played the Giants, and I was super excited to do it. And it's a pretty cool thing. But Why do I want to talk about the 2003 team right now? What were we just talking about?
Why not? I was making a point about Branch and Givens, how they didn't have the pedigree. They were second and seventh rounds, respectively. But they were reliable. They were where Brady wanted them to be, et cetera. And they were tough. They blocked. Yeah. Branch was explosive. Givens was, you know, Givens was a tight end in a wideout's body.
Branch didn't even play in that game. And it's just, you know, I have this feeling that, like, around 2000, when they did a new collective bargaining agreement, somewhere around there, I feel like the game changed in a way that suited Bill Belichick, okay? You know, you could talk about all the stuff pre-Brady, yada, yada, yada. I think what happened is that he understood how to constantly be changing your team to suit the needs of the game around you. Because at the same time, he's up there against Jim Fossil. This is Fossil's last season as a head coach in the NFL. And up until 2003, Fossil had been to a Super Bowl. He had a better record than Belichick for his career. A pretty solid coach, right? And then it all just fell apart kind of quickly. And you look at it and you go, up to this point in time, the general thinking has been, let's build around one way of thinking, one system that we coach well, and then we'll just bring in players to populate it. And in the 80s, that made a lot of sense because you didn't really have free agency. You could stockpile guys who suited your needs, and they didn't go anywhere. But by 2000, things started to change. Free agency had really taken hold. You couldn't keep a team together for too long. So you had to be more dynamic. You had to plan differently. You had to, you know, if the kind of player you didn't want, the kind of player you wanted wasn't available, you had to find other players and then kind of change what you do. And the Patriots have been doing that throughout.
Right.
You know, their offense has constantly been evolving, and they've managed, it seems, to get the most out of whatever 53-man group of players they have available. So this idea that, like, you know that, you know, a year or two after the draft, you know that the team is, you know how the players, whether they're hits or misses, right? We score everything along this hit or miss line. I'm looking back at that game. I see Kerry Collins out there, who was the number one overall draft pick, by the expansion Carolina Panthers, had a lot of problems. And then wound up leading the Giants to the Super Bowl, didn't reach his peak until then. I'm thinking about Drew Brees. Currently, up until he got hurt last week, was trading back and forth with Tom Brady for the most touchdown passes of all time. In his final year, the Chargers went out and drafted Philip Rivers because they had no faith in Drew Brees. So, you know, things change. The NFL is in a constant state of flux. Don't lock in your opinions. You don't have to decide after week 8 that the Ravens aren't winning a playoff game. You don't have to decide after 16 career games that N'Keal Harry is the worst. And like Sony Michel, it's possible he was only good for 2018. Like that's possible. I think last year you give him this offensive line, I think he runs for another 1,200 yards. But okay, you want to say maybe he's not that kind of player, maybe he lost some of his burst. That happens. Sometimes two things can be true. Player can be the right pick and the right choice at the time and then falls out of favor. The player can be not living up to standards at the beginning and then becomes Drew Brees, right? Winds up leading the league in touchdowns when he's done. So, you know, everything's in a state of flux.
Agreed. And the other thing that I'll add is that when Belichick took over in Cleveland in the early 90s, there was a free agency, wasn't actually free agency in the NFL at the time. I believe it was called the Plan B free agency back then. And he even managed to bring some good players in to help augment those Browns teams. First and foremost, Pepper Johnson being among them. But if you think about, you know, you just discussed their kind of overall philosophy in acquiring players. Not only is he an elite at acquiring players as the general manager, mm-hmm. Think about the, and you're watching the 2003, you're going to do a podcast about the 2003 season. The team in 01 in no way resembled the team offensively in 2004, even though they had Corey Dillon, they were much more dynamic. After the rule changes in 06, they took advantage of those. They went and became more wide open, and they threw the ball over the yard, and they put up dynamic offensive numbers. And then they, in the early
early 2010s,
they pivoted to from having the elite talented wide receivers. They brought in Hernandez and Gronkowski. They had a very solid running game. They retooled in 14. They probably maybe the best offensive team of the Super Bowl winners in 2016. Brady was MVP that season. Then they morph again back when everybody gets lighter. This point I've made time and again, when the defenses get lighter and faster in 2018, Sony Michel is the perfect guy for that team. And they absolutely bullied lighter defenses and won the Super Bowl again.
People have an idea of what it takes to win in this league.
And that it's not static. It's just not static.
And that idea is wrong because it is usually static. That you have to, you just, Belichick says this almost every week and no one hears it. It's situational.
Situational football.
Imagine the company. Imagine you're working for a construction company. What does it take to build this building? Well, what do the blueprints say? I mean, are we building a house?
Just use blueprint again, Dave. Come on.
If we're building an office building, well, in this case, it applies. If we're building an office building, we're going to need steel, right? You know, if we're building a house, we're going to need some 2x4s. We're going to need build that frame up on a foundation, and we're going to need siding. And all of those things, right? It's a whole different set of materials, even though in both cases you're building a building. And maybe you're building it on a hill. Do you need to put a well on the property? Like does it connect to the sewers? There's all of these considerations that go into everything you're doing. And when you are a person who has expertise in your field, you see these things. But what's tricky for the media covering this is they're not experts. They're sort of like in a black box situation where the only thing that they learn is what the team tells them, okay? And so then we have all this conjecture and guessing and like, why isn't J.C. Jackson on the Pro Bowl list? And they got some really curious ideas about why that was. And then they just added him to the Pro Bowl list. Like, it may have been an oversight. Who knows? But we're running out of time, so let me ask, is there anything else we should hit on? Any other nonsense that came up in the last week or so?
I mean, there's been nonsense. I got to tell you, the one thing that continues to astound me, and it has to go back with the despicable almost the coach. He has been dumping on, since the day he signed the contract, Stephon Gilmore. Gilmore... You know, Jeff Howe, I'm basically paraphrasing what Jeff Howe tweeted. Bedard came out after the first few games of the 2017 season and ripped Gilmore to shreds, saying that he because he mumbled in his press conference meetings, that showed a lack of confidence, that sort of thing. He made the game-winning play in the 27th AFC Championship game. He made the Super Bowl ceiling interception in the Super Bowl 53. He was the defensive player of the year in 2019. He had the temerity to get injured. And Bedard said, oh, it's a one-week thing. Initially, Bedard said it was a one-week thing. Right. He's pissed about his contract. It's turned out to be more than a one-week thing. It's been 2, 3, 4 weeks now. And now Bedard's doubling down again on that he's dissatisfied with his contract. And he's a malcontent with nothing.
So the thing about him putting his house on the market, and I love this, he's like, he put his house on the market with the deadline for bids was the trade deadline. So that shows you something. And to me, it says, yeah, he thought he had a reasonable expectation that he might get traded. And so if he was going to get traded, he wanted to sell his house before he left town. If the deadline for the offers was March 18th or whenever the end of the league year is, I would say, okay, you know, there's a guy who kind of wants out of town.
But same thing instead, happened with Brady last year when he put his place in Chestnut Hill on the market.
Right. And I think that one made a little more sense because, you know, it was like a $40 million property and yada yada. But I don't know. Like, you can't read tea leaves. You know, you can't sit here. Because one of the things was Alex Guerrero. And Alex Guerrero put his house on the market. And I actually looked that up. I got some information on that and confirmed that. And his horse was on the market. But then you know what? Alex Guerrero sold his house and then bought a house in like Plymouth. You know what I mean? So at the time, even though Brady did wind up leaving, at the time, that was completely useless information.
Alex it's like Guerrero one of those things.
Bought a new one.
What it reminds me of is when they track a flight incoming of a college coach is coming in from Jimbo Fisher when he was at Florida State. They're tracking planes from Tallahassee to wherever the destination is to see if promote conjecture that Jimbo Fisher might be the next coach of where is he now, Texas A&M?
I don't know. I have no idea. I shouldn't agree with that.
Probably, neither do I. I just find his Bedard's. I mean, Bedard's crapping, continuing to crap on a player who's been nothing but spectacular every step of the way is curious at best. And my best guess is if Greg Bedard's house goes on the market, it's because creditors need to get paid. That's just my conjecture.
That's allegedly.
Allegedly, call it.
Allegedly. So. Yeah, no, that all is very on brand. And my point got away from me right before you were. I forgot what I was going to say.
No, the Volin on Wenyu thing. The Volin on Wenyu thing absolutely slayed me on Sunday night. I mean, you want to talk about a lack of insight and B just a lack.
What about
of
Patterson?
Cordaro Patterson.
Oh no! I'm sorry. I'm thinking of a fake tweet. But you know. And
Bedard's thing with Mike Evans, with his bizarre fascination with saying Mike Evans is basically calling him a lazy asshole. So I'm going to do really quickly. Volin tweeted on Sunday during the game, or it was the Bucks game was Sunday night. Brady not on the same page with Mike Evans in the end zone. This is becoming a thing, end quote. Trey Wingo just 40 minutes later. Brady now has 7 TD passes targeting Mike Evans in the red zone this season, the most red zone touchdowns by any quarterback receiver duo in 2020 in the NFL.
It's unbelievable.
It's uncanny how consistently wrong they are over and over and over.
Well, Ben said something like he was choosing the Titans minus 2 against the Colts on Thursday night because he trusted – Because he wasn't going to bet against Vrabel and Tannehill. He was going to bet against Vrabel and Tannehill on a short night, on a short week. And I was like, wait a minute. Of course, there's no chance that there's any real data that backs up that rationale. So I looked it up, and in weeks where they played on a short week, they are 2-2 in real, straight up, and versus the spread, 1-3 going into that game. They're now 1-4, 0-2 with Tannehill. There was no that of course, like the everything that has happened prior to Thursday says, don't trust Vrabel and Tannehill on a short week.
To quote the Bankrupt Boys, fade or follow.
Do you know how long it took me to learn that? 5-10 minutes. Like, I didn't have to get a subscription to like Pro Football Reference Premium. You know, I'm not Nick. I didn't have to go get Premium. But anyway, well, never mind about Nick.
No, never mind about that, please.
We don't even have Bingo. Scartelli's going to be disappointed in us. No, but that's probably his normal state. Just being disappointed in us. So it's a high standard. Try to live up to it.
I may resent it, but I can't deny it. He's disappointed in us for sure.
Well, you know, but then we have Al. And we just kind of throw Al at Scartelli. And that distracts, I think. I think it draws away the negative attention. So
something like that. Or
you bring up Volin and then he's you know. We're all set.
Scartelli's obviously a very smart dude, but his loathing of certain members of the local media just gives me life. I feel like he has the other half of this locket when I'm speaking to him at times. So
All right.
He'll be back on soon, hopefully.
As we've discussed, I have to leave now. So entitledtown@gmail.com.
Correct.
And
Twitter account @entitledtown. Correct.
Go review us on iTunes. I think we've done a podcast here. What are we on to?
We're on to the Texans, and don't forget to turn off your radios.
All right, man. Thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy the game this weekend, and bye for now.
All right. Go take care. All right,
man. I'm going to go.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye.